Rutherford Issues with Brian Barrett on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Rutherford Issues powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Through Sharing Change, MTE members round up their bills to support local nonprofits. You can learn more at sharingchange.org. That's sharingchange.org. And joining me here this morning, State Representative Mike Sparks. And we're going to continue on with roundtable guest Charles Jones here as well. But Mike, as he settles in, did notice the story on the website about the town of Smyrna inviting the community out on Thursday, July 3rd at 10 a.m. at the Smyrna Justice Center as a plaque unveiling will take place there for Sally Walls.
Yeah, shout out to H.C. Cole. I'm assuming he's the one that kind of originated that idea. And then the mayor, Marister Reed, and the entire council and police chief for David Santucci, the town manager. You know, I had been looking at wanting to honor Sally in some way. I consider her a mentor. She was my neighbor. Major Walls was my mentor. They were my neighbors. First job at the Omni Hut at 13, working for $1.50 an hour. Used to walk up there from the house. And then they had the country club. They had the woodshed. A lot of memories. Major Walls was at Pearl Harbor. Major Walls was Sally's husband. And he was at Pearl Harbor when it was bombed. And he started the country club. And Sally used to give me, you know, used to carry me over to the country club. I remember.
Did you ever get taken to the woodshed?
No, you know, no. You know what? Sally had she had such a bark about her. If she got on to you, you knew it. She could whistle.
I could see it in this picture.
Oh, she's speaking right there. Well, we named the road, Murfreesboro Road, after Major Walls for, I guess, man, it's about 3 miles. And all the way up to 840 from right there in front of where Joe sells the North American Evergreens right there in front of Bank of America, all the way up there. We had a little ceremony. The mayor, Esther Reed, spoke. Jim Tracy, I think Bill Kittren, and Gerald Melton and T-Dot and others were there for that ceremony.
That looks like Keith, it's Lowry. Inside.
It was inside the Omni Hut.
Yeah.
And one thing I appreciate about y'all, WGNS has always been good to the Omni Hut, to Major Walls, to Sally Walls. And Sally and Major Walls, they were just good to the community. But shout out to HG for doing that. But Sally would have a whistle. Like, I hung out with her son, Lonnie, and we'd be playing in that field in the back, the big 3 acres, which she developed, which we'd mow that with a push mower. We'd share the push mower. Major Walls would pay us $20, mow 3 acres, man, with a little 21-inch push mower. We'd split that $10. So back then, $10 was money. And but anyways, they're just such awesome people. And you know, I got to preach Sally's funeral. We'll speak at Sally's funeral. And you know, there's just so many memories. I just made a little Facebook post asking people to share a memory of Sally. I'm under Michael Sparks if somebody wanted to make a comment. But
don't you wish you had that hairline from back in that picture right there?
Why am I losing it? Is that what you're saying? I got a little more gray.
Oh, no.
I'm getting a little gray, too.
I don't know.
But Sally was just a trooper, man. I've seen her wrestle. I've seen her take down two guys, I mean, wrestling back in the day. She was tough. And I've seen her. I was probably 10 in Major Walls because women didn't go through no police academy back then. That was rare, okay? And he built her I guess it was an 8-foot wall. Or 6-foot wall, whatever. Somebody can correct me. Maybe a 6-foot wall. And one of the things she had to cross that wall, and it was made out of like 2x4s. And as little kids, we'd watch her, and she'd run up. She couldn't do it. She'd run up, couldn't do it. She'd run up, couldn't do it. And finally, she did it. So she had that determination and persistency. And that's one thing we're going to get into is with Mr. Jones here is talk about mentors and having positive mentors in your life and people that inspire you. So she not only was a trailblazer, which y'all's title is accurate with that, she was the first female chief in the state of Tennessee. I got to honor at the state capitol the night she passed, and Senator Bill Hagerty gave her a shout out after, you know, hearing my comments on the floor. So she really touched a lot of lives, man. And one thing about her, she had a heart for people. I mean, she had a heart for African Americans, and she just had a heart for really like I don't want to say the downtrodden, but she grew up real poor. They grew up really poor. And anyways, thinking of Smyrna for doing that. And I know folks like Rick Hall and others will be tickled. Kevin Arnold, Andy Miller, and Ken Atkins and others that'll be I'm sure that'll be there. I just hope that everybody in their family, they got a lot of family, know about this event next Thursday, July 3rd.
Well, we've got a post on the website and share it out there. And Charles Jones here with us as well. And Mike, this is kind of a bit of a holdover from the last hour. But at the very end, Mr. Jones, you started to talk about a book that's about to be published that you have written. And I think maybe we could expand a little bit on that. Didn't have a whole lot of time to get into that part about it. So tell us again about the book that you're writing.
When I was in the Army, I got the opportunity to work in the psychiatric clinic as part of the staff. And my last year in the Army, I was the assistant to the chief psychiatrist at Fort Benning. And that kind of introduced me to people in that field. And then later, when I went back to school after the Army, I did a master's degree, and psychology was my minor, and speech pathology was the major. And so I worked in public education for some time after that. And one of my friends kind of set me up one day. A fellow named Dick Sinner was in the music department. He invited me to go to the teachers' meeting, or the teachers' association meeting, and I had never attended. And he had already arranged to nominate me for president. So the first day I went to the meeting, I got elected president of the group. And then the lady that was supposed to serve that year resigned. And so the first year that I was in the association, I became not only president, but they were negotiating salaries. And so I had a good relationship with the assistant superintendent and superintendent and the school board until I became president of the association. And then after that, the superintendent would hardly speak to me because we had some kind of tough negotiations that year. But I've had some. Oh, and having been involved in that, I got nominated as one of the state presidents of the year. And then when I got invited to come to Washington and work for the National Association, all from that one. From that one experience, and I became the first employee of Teacher Services Corporation, which was owned by the National Education Association. And my job was to go out and negotiate deals in behalf of teachers. And so here I go from the classroom to negotiating with national corporations for member benefits for 1 million teachers. And quite an experience. But you know, when you're in over your head, it doesn't matter how deep the water is,
it's still over the head, isn't
yeah.
it?
So I kind of started off at the top and worked my way down.
You're there are so many different aspects of what you have done with in your lifetime, but this book seems to be a passion project for you. Tell me about that more.
I don't really know when it started, because it's probably been within the last 10 years that I got into it. And I have written articles for a long time and organized things, but this is the formal effort to write a book that would be in the market. And what it basically narrows down to is that your intellectual memory begins to decline, your experiential memory is still quite vivid if you just understand the process of activating it. And so one of the chapters in this book is called That Reminds Me. And so in effect, when you're in a conversation and God has given us, in effect, a librarian to take care of our memory system so that when we start to engage in a new activity, then this concept of a librarian brings something from our past and says, this is not totally new. There's something that you've had an experience in the past that carries over to this. So there's always the opportunity of the past and the present to become balanced out if you activate it. So many times we'll think of something when we're in a conversation and we think, well, the person's really not interested in that. But we really should share it as we think about it just to keep our mind active and to keep a balance between the present and the past. For example, when I knew I was coming here today, I tried to remember everybody that lived in Old Jefferson in 1936. And I could probably name almost every family in that whole community just sitting here thinking back on it. And that would be part of my experiential memory.
Yeah.
Let's just pick a couple of the characters.
Sure.
The local merchant was a fellow named Payden Smith, and he was just a quality guy, and he had a general store, and we lived next door to the Smiths. We lived in a little house built out of used lumber, unpainted, and the Smiths lived in a colonial house next door. And sometimes Mrs. Smith would give me a ride home from when I went to get groceries for my mother. We'd just be buying maybe coffee or sugar or things that we didn't grow on in the garden. And one day my father saw me getting out of the car, and she had like a 32 Ford at that time. And he said, you know, it wastes her gas to have to stop for you to get out. And what he really meant, I shouldn't be accepting a ride. But I probably interpreted it a different way. The next time I was getting a ride, when she slowed down, I just jumped out. Kind of a child's logic, you know.
Sure.
She wouldn't have to waste any gas if I just jumped out rather than waiting for her to stop. And she almost died of a heart attack when she saw me rolling in the ditch. She said, don't you ever do that again. And so I kind of over-responded to my dad's comment. But he had, I worked with my dad quite a bit, and sometimes he would give me advice that really wasn't beneficial. And I remember like one time we were decking a house, and we were on one side of the roof and these two guys were on the other side. And he said, well, let's just really go full blast and make a showing here. What he meant was, we'll show up these other two carpenters on the other side of the roof. And I said, why would we want to do that? It was like he was the kid and I was the father. So somehow I inherited my mother's reasoning rather than my dad's, because I think he was a master at shortcuts.
Thinking about the Old Jefferson community, Mike, this is some of the history that, while it's still here in terms of the people that remember that, we need to get that documented and archived. You know?
I mean, really, it is so cool. This is, sometimes I think I'm in some weird simulation or something. I know it sounds kind of odd, but think about this. Mr. Charles Jones, when he grew up at Old Jefferson, was a town outside of Smyrna that TVA, when they dammed up Percy Priest, they miscalculated it all, and they did really displace all these families. And I know Charles has a heart for what went on. So did Toby Francis. So did Roger Thomas. So did Ernie Johns. But he remembers traveling down Jefferson Pike, which is what we would know as Samberley Parkway, which we would know as the Smyrna Airport or Seward Air Force Base. He remembers traveling down it, before Seward Air Force Base was even constructed, didn't you?
Well, we moved there in 1936 and lived there until my dad, while we were still there, he went to work at Oak Ridge where the, when they were doing the Manhattan Project. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Brunswick, Georgia, and worked on, they built what were called Liberty ships for hauling cargo to Europe and Asia. And then at the end of the war, when they salvaged all of these ships and sold them off, Onassis bought them and made oil tankers out of them. So he became the richest man in the world from buying these salvage ships at scrap price. And you might, I'll tell you an Onassis story sometime, or that happened one day. We had a fellow at church in Washington that was named Antonio Gatto, Tony Gatto. He was from Nashville, or from one of the suburbs of Nashville. And one day after Kennedy had died and Onassis had married former Kennedy or Kennedy's wife, Jacqueline, they were on their yacht in the Caribbean, and he got chest pains, and so they flew the doctor over from Houston over to the yacht, I guess, to check him out. And his wife's name was Anita, and when he got back from waiting, from serving the richest man in the world, Anita said, "Tony, how much did you charge him?" He said, "Well, I didn't charge him anything. It was a courtesy call for the doctor in Detroit, in Washington, New York." And she said, "The one time you get a chance to really make some money, you blow it." But she had a great sense of humor.
Well, tell that story to the listeners about you. You bought part of Hickory Hollow Mall, the old Macy's, correct?
Oh yeah. Well, we. The mall in Antioch was for sale. Somebody told me about it, and I made him an offer of $1 million, and for the 12 acres and the empty building, and they came back at 1.6, which I accepted then, and then later I sold it to a developer for, I think, 5.2. So, it really got me a little more enthused about buying mm-hmm. empty buildings.
Because you got part, you got Rivergate, right? You've got part of
later,
that.
Later, we bought probably 10 Macy buildings altogether, maybe 12.
And you donated all the clothes, gave all the clothes out.
Well, it was only Rivergate. We bought the clothes with the building, and then we donated that to people coming out of prison and things like that.
We're seeing a lot of malls that are closing and losing their anchor stores and things of that nature. What I mean, we've got that same situation here with Stones River Town Center, you know, losing the major tenant, Dillard's. So
we bought the whole mall in Florida. It's the first one we've bought. Macy buildings all over, but we bought the mall by Tampa Bay. It's called the DeSoto Mall.
Mm-hmm.
60 acres. So we've got about one of the nicest piece of property in Florida now, and we're trying to repurpose it.
So what is a good idea to repurpose those buildings to be?
Well, one of the, you know, AI is building some tremendous developments like in Austin and other places. We're trying to get them interested maybe in our property because we've got an 800,000-foot building that's sitting there that could be repurposed. And and then we've got 40 acres of parking that we have rented out part of it, and then we've sold off pieces. And right now, there's not any of the land that we've sold there that brought less than $1 million an acre. So it's still still a pretty good, pretty good spot.
We had, you know, one thing I wanted to talk about with Dr. Krauser on the earlier show. You and I had a good meeting with THDA, Tennessee Housing Development Association, and we met with Bob Freeman, his dad recently passed away. His dad was a major developer in Nashville, about affordable housing, about some of your ideas. And Bob asked me after you had left, and Bob and I worked good together. And he said, well, Mike, what do you want to accomplish? I said, well, one, we got a crisis, affordable housing, and just creativeness. And I'm hoping something positive will come out of that. And you elaborated a little bit about the 200-unit apartment complex.
What we talked about was finding a piece of land that that could either take some buildings off of it, or a piece of land big enough to put a couple hundred units on, and then offer that as our first what would be benevolent capitalism, where the tenants, by just leasing space, if they live up to the requirement of the lease, they would build equity. Say in a five-year period, they'd have enough to make a down payment, either to buy into it or to take the money and go somewhere else. And so you could help young people or any age get a down payment that they might otherwise have trouble doing.
Yeah. Boy, I mean, it's hard now.
Yeah.
You know, cost of living and...
Well, and rental rates have gone up so much.
Yeah.
We bought several properties and let the tenant build equity, and nearly all of them had at least 50,000 equity. Some had much more than that.
That's nice.
Where you wouldn't... Yeah. You wouldn't just walk up and give somebody $50,000, but if you promise it in a deal and it works out, it's like the whole thing gets blessed and
plus
they
you
become
make
a share.
I mean, yeah. you make money on, you know, the monthly rent and things of that nature. So,
well, we collected whatever the payments amounted to in bringing down the mortgage, that went to us. So we made roughly 20% a year, and then the tenants that were there made at least 20% a year from just being there. And so...
Interesting way to think about that. Well, our time has run out, unfortunately, but it was good seeing you today. And, of course, if you want to hear more, Dr. Krause in the roundtable today had a much longer conversation. And, Mike, I guess the conversation will continue with you on Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday night, 5 o'clock. A conversation with Mike Sparks. I'll try to have Charles on the next few weeks.
You got any plans? I mean, you know what you're going to
talk
about?
Well, you know, I've got some guys I'm hoping it's going to come up. You know, just left them some messages. You know. But if anybody has any ideas for a creative show, just my cell number is 525-3198. Let me know.
Most of the time, it's just the same little group up here, right?
Well, we talk a lot about history and stuff. I think. And okay. We get into just a little politics.
You know? Well, there you go. Sunday nights, 5 o'clock, right here on WGNS. Have a great day, everybody. See you next time.